Welcome to The Dolan Diaries, a show for creators of all stripes to think deeply about their art and its place in culture. My goal with this show is to encourage you to gain clarity, movement, alignment, and focus. You are a leader, whether you know it or not. And if I can encourage you to keep going and not stop, to hone your message and style, to become the human being beyond your wildest dreams, I believe we will see exponential impact in the world. The tools are there. The opportunity is now. Will you claim your voice and speak truth? Let's crush fear, stop complaining, stop comparing, drop the excuses, and take this creative life seriously. You were created with a purpose, and it's time to claim your superpower. I'm your host, Jeff Dolan, and this is episode 12 and marks the first time I will have a guest on the show. All show notes will be at jeffdolan.com/12, where you can also subscribe to the written version of this show. My guest today is Jamar John Johnson, an entrepreneur, a comedian, an entrepomedian. Jamar is based here in LA as we record this and is from New York. He has appeared on The Katie Couric Show, The Dr. Oz Show, rubbed shoulders with Dave Chappelle, served our country in the Navy, and spoke to thousands with his unique brand of improvisational stand-up comedy. I am so excited he is my first guest today on The Dolan Diaries because one thing about comedians I love is that they bring joy to people. And without that, this creative life gets really hard. So in this episode, episode 12, we are going to talk about Jamar's journey as a creator and businessman, his ups and downs, his insights into the creative life and how he handles the business side, and why his approach is so counterculture. Let's jump in. Good morning.
What's going on? Thanks for having me, Jeff.
This is cool. So one of the things that is just crazy about how we met, right? I want to tell the story because it's just, it's
absolutely
crazy. So I have never been on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. I'm going to admit right now because I've been in corporate America for, you know, 15 years. I always stayed in, you know, nice hotels and mm-hmm. all that. And so never really had a need to.
Sure.
But now that I'm kind of doing the entrepreneur thing, I was, you know, coming to LA to mm-hmm. do some podcasting, course creation, mm-hmm. and I looked up, you know, Airbnb, and I found, you know, your place, and I looked at your profile, and you were like, oh, I'm into Bitcoin, and I'm doing all these creative things, and here's my, I saw your studio set up, mm-hmm. and there was something about you, I just said, I need to just stay at this guy's place. I mean, I didn't even care about anything else. I was like, I need to just connect with this guy, and sure enough, like, you were beyond expectation. I mean, I came in here.
Thank you.
You were just so fun.
Thank you.
Right? And just so welcoming and such a good host. And you're funny. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
Your journey, kind of where you're from.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm originally from New York City, born in the Bronx, and stayed there until I was about 12. Then I moved into Manhattan, on the Upper East Side, across the street from the Metropolitan Hospital. So 99th Street and 2nd Avenue. My mother still lives there today. It's 2018. My goal is to have her out of there in 5 years.
Nice.
We'll probably still own that apartment and Airbnb it, because that's one of the game changers that that happened to me after a 14-year military career. I discovered Airbnb because I was traveling coast to coast to visit my daughter, who lives in San Francisco. I had her the day I graduated grad school at Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. So that was a magical day, and I knew I would be forever connected to kind of the Bay Area of Northern California. So on one of my trips to visit her in 2011 is when I first started discovering Airbnb. So, you know, it was one of those things, I tucked it in my memory banks. I had used it all the time to go visit her. And then when I got out of the military and I was looking at what I wanted to do, I knew that corporate America wasn't going to be it for me. Having a master's in system engineering analysis, you know, I could have made 110, 120 walking out of the military into one of those types of, you know, program manager positions, but they wouldn't be in locations that would have me able to kind of achieve my goals. My goals at the time were, you know, make it on television as a comedian. Well, I accomplished that in the first year out of the military.
Nice.
So Airbnb was one of those kind of game changers for me, because not only is it a way to kind of earn some passive income, right? But it's a way to really rub shoulders with people from all walks of life, exchange ideas. And so I would say, you know, without giving away, it wasn't quite six figures, but it was close to it my first year of doing Airbnb in New York City.
Good for you.
A three-bedroom apartment.
Nice.
Each room was getting a substantial amount per night, and so it was a good experience. So with that, I knew that that would be something that I kind of kept in my back pocket as something that I could fall on, not simply for income, but for the opportunity to meet people. And so that's why my profile attracted you, because I wrote it specifically to find the right type of people.
Nice. You know, I mean, you are a super connector.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you are a super connector. I mean, even in the short time that I've known you, mm-hmm. you've already been trying to connect me with movers and shakers
Absolutely.
In LA.
Absolutely.
So it's awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a saying, you know, your net worth is a culmination of your network.
That's right.
Right? And so the more people that you are connected with and are aware of what their gifts are for the world, the more you can make other people aware of it.
Nice.
I'm a purveyor of awesomeness. I'll put that. And so what that means is that when I find things of great significance or impact, I feel compelled to go share that with other people.
Nice.
And so that's kind of the life journey that I'm on.
Did you always want to pursue your creative side? Like, was that always something that you were like, I got to get around to? Or what's the intersection with you between like your art, like creativity and business?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think that if you think about what an entrepreneur is, you know, an entrepreneur solves problems for people, you know, at scale. And even if you like, even if you solve the problem of saving someone the time of having to mow their lawn because they would rather do something else, you did it, and perhaps you're more skillful at it than them, so you can do a lot more of that thing for other people at scale, and then just earn a living, right? So to me, there's a creative element to being an entrepreneur. It's tied into it. It's people want to separate it from, and people have this misconception that as an artist, you need to just focus on the art. But as an artist, unless you have resources, you can't focus on the art at all.
Yeah.
Like literally, the art becomes secondary.
Right.
So the first part is sustainability of your life and your existence. And if you learn that you could do both, then the time you spend trying to find ways to make money, some of them are going to be one-time only transactions. So it'd be better suited if you look for things that could lead to multiple opportunities. And if they're connected to your art, then even better. So you have to spend time being creative, even thinking of how to expand your art. And through entrepreneurship, that's how you make yourself fully sustainable. So for me, you know, I had an airbrush business when I was 16. And it was great because the community center that I attended had all these art supplies. And like, you know, one in 30 kids took advantage of it. The other kids were doing other things. And so I was in there, you know, messing with the airbrush machine and, you know, taking my ability to draw by hand and putting that on shirts. And so I would have people provide the shirt to me. I had the paint and the machine for free. And all I did was exchange my time and my skill set to charge someone $25 for my time to create a shirt.
Wow.
Now, that is difficult because you can't really do that at scale. But it gave me that first kind of like introduction to, okay, you can take something you can do that's really good
mm-hmm.
and then exchange that for some money.
Right.
Right. So I knew early on that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so the first route that I chose was to pursue the understanding of business through business management, was my undergrad, with a focus in accounting.
Wow.
Because I was like, no matter what business you're in, you're going to need to know accounting.
True.
So I was like, this could be a core fundamental. And of course, when you study business management, you study marketing, you study psychology, you study all of these things. But I would say that I had a shift from just pure creative to like understanding the practical, because I felt like every business needs this. And so I would at least set myself up to be in the business of helping businesses with their accounting. Thus, I'll always be in business. And then that'll afford me time to spend on art and creativity.
So that was always a part of it from the start.
It really was. I did my first internship at 15 at I was doing the books at like a community center, like through like a job summer job program. Mm-hmm. And I remember this well-dressed accountant walked in, and he had a Jaguar parked outside. And I was like, that guy with the suit, that's who I gotta be, you know? And now sometimes I like wearing suits and sometimes I like just wearing a nice leather jacket and performing stand-up comedy on stage. So, you know, you can be multiple things. People think you just have to be one thing.
Right.
But we are all made up of layers upon layers upon layers.
That's right.
And so you don't have to ignore. You can acknowledge all of them. And that's why I call myself an entrepreneurian. You know, an entrepreneur who happens to be funny, who believes that humor is an important component of our life and connecting with people and building trust. And also the fact that they know that you have the ability to take risks in your thoughts and to connect with people. If they know you're just always playing it safe and conservative, it's like, do they ever really know you? Mm. Because we definitely are all more humorous around people we know and trust already,
right,
than we are around perfect strangers.
Right.
So the ability to show your sense of humor and also, you know, not even really come close to the line of what could be like risque, but just to know how to use humor but not have to use the risky side of humor, the side that just connects and brings joy to people, that gives people like confidence that, wow, that's a confident person, because they're willing to put themselves out there and maybe look foolish, but that's okay because they don't think so much of themselves that they think they're above anybody else.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that you told me, that which was really interesting, which I think is kind of counter to what I thought of comedy, is that you're doing improvisational stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you literally will go for an hour off the top of your head.
Absolutely.
Which is crazy to me, because I thought, you know, all the top comedians that I've heard and read up on, they go into these clubs and they try out jokes and they'll distill all their best jokes into their, you know, Netflix special, mm-hmm, or HBO special or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then when I heard what you're doing, and even like your counter argument to that,
mm-hmm,
which is, you know, it's hard to connect with that particular audience.
Absolutely.
Right? Talk about that a little bit. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I would say I developed that because I saw some of the greats doing it, like Dave Chappelle. Like, I know you got a clip that you're going to play.
Oh, I can't wait to play this clip. It's so funny. And tell that story after you tell us.
Yeah. So I'll tell the story, because I think that leads into why I perform the way I perform. So I'm doing comedy now for maybe 4 years at this point. And I've got business cards made up and they've got my face on them with a big grinning smile. And underneath it has like my name, and then it has like what are some of the things that I do. There was a time where I realized that I have so many capabilities. You know, I called myself a backslasher, right? Or actually, it should be forward slash. I don't know why people, it's like when you go www.com, iamjamar.com.
They're all slashes.
It's just forward slash. People get it right. If you put a backslash, it's not going to go.
Right.
Right. So forward slash. But I had on my card, comedian, writer, singer, artist, handyman. And when you see it on a card, it's such a juxtaposition on the last verb or word or whatever you call it. And Dave Chappelle saw that card. I put it on stage at a show that he was doing when he first got back from Africa, when everybody thought he went crazy,
right,
and it was smoking crack, which, right, none of that was true.
Right.
He just needed a break because he was just so burnt out from the industry and all, mm-hmm, of the things that go with it. And so he told us exactly why he went, where he went, what he's up to. He, at this point, he was already the buff Dave Chappelle. This is in 2009. So clearly he was eating better and taking care of himself.
You can see,
you
know, that.
You can see it. And so he performed for about 6.5 hours in one show.
Wow.
He didn't use the bathroom once.
Wow.
And he just had a wealth of knowledge. And so that's when I realized, I mean, I'd already been into reading a lot, but that's when I realized that he was extremely well read.
Mm.
You know, he knows issues. Unless he's just watching the History Channel 24 hours a day, like the facts and the specifics of some of the things that he pointed out before he made them into jokes, it was out of this world. So 3 hours into the show, he looks down, he picks up my business card and he goes, "Whose card is this?" And then he reads it out and the crowd goes laugh. And then I'm like, wow, he just spent 2 minutes completely just freestyling. And so the first hour of his show was pretty much that. It was pretty much interaction with the audience. It was asking questions and then going on tangents. And so I was like, I want to be able to do that one day.
Whose card is this? Is this you? Oh, that is you. Comedian, writer, singer, artist, handyman. This is by far the most hilarious movie I have ever seen in my life. This guy's gonna make $1 billion. Jamar, I'm serious. You're gonna make a lot of money with that.
You think so?
Just judging off this car, I'm gonna forget you. And then a year from now, I'm gonna be doing my laundry and be like, oh, I remember those paints. I'm gonna pull this card out and I'm gonna start cracking up laughing. I'm gonna be like, and then I'll call you up. And you know the saddest part of that whole scenario? It'll still be the same number. Hello, this is Jamar speaking. You know this is Handyman Services.
I did take a couple of like little courses on improv and the importance of it with stand-up because I've heard this from I think it was Jeff Garland, but I heard it from a lot of different comedians. You only need material when you fail to connect with the audience.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now think about that, because it's good to show up prepared and have things you know you can talk about, but if you get to a place and you touch base with the people, like before the show, you meet a few people, right? Like especially if you're a speaker, it's like you want to speak to the audience you're in front of and what are their real life, real time concerns. You want to be able to speak to that along with your own message, because that's going to create a synergistic environment,
right?
In which they're going to feel like each person you're talking to is going to feel like you're talking to each person in that audience is going to feel like you're talking directly to them. And that's the most powerful way to connect with an audience. And so when I'm performing, like this Sunday night, we're in March right now, I'll be performing at the Comedy Store in the main room in front of like 300 people. I'll be hosting that show. So although there's 300 people and I can't talk to everyone individually, the fact that I'll have some interactions with a small percentage of them will make the other people, it'll suck them into the environment and they're there, they're present. And then while I'm having a conversation with them, I transition into written material without them knowing, and then back out into conversational material without them knowing.
Wow.
So they don't know. It's almost like they think, I just thought of it in real time. And that gives it that extra pop.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when after seeing Dave do that, I really was like, okay, I gotta work on this. And then ultimately it comes down to just being free and comfortable on stage. When you are comfortable on stage, people can tell, you relax them. They're not worried. But when you're up there and you're like, so I've got these jokes for you people. And like they take on your, because a lot of people are very empathetic.
Right. It's self-awareness on stage, right?
Absolutely.
Like the wrong kind of self-awareness.
Yeah.
It's like you're aware that you're on stage trying to do this thing.
Exactly.
And that takes away because your attention is on yourself.
Exactly.
Instead of on your audience. And they can sense that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah, so I think that, and then in terms of, you know, being able to do it for an hour, like I probably am not at the point where I can do it for 6 hours like Dave Chappelle.
I don't think anybody is.
But,
and I didn't even know that he did that, right? Because he just came out with the Netflix specials where he's got, 2 hours on there?
Yeah, 2 hours on there.
And I thought that was like scripted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, man, this guy, but you're saying he probably didn't script all that.
Well, the one where he's sitting down,
mm-hmm.
that one, that's material for sure. But it's, what you got to understand is that he can get so much daytime whenever he wants, that if he wants to do 3 hours at a club after hours with a small audience, he can. And so when you get into the muscle, if you get into the habit of flexing that muscle of just talking for hours. And the thing is, it's not like I have a fast frame of speech, right? I talk pretty fast unless I slow it down, you know, and I know how to, when I'm telling stories, when I'm bringing people in to what I wanted them to feel, I can feel my energy shift as I shift my voice, you know? And so when Dave is talking, he's kind of like, it's kind of like if Brown versus Wade Reboard, like, you know what I mean? Like, and then he'll slow it down. And then he'll smoke his e-cigarette or his vaporizer or his cigarette. You know what I mean? So he has the cadence changes. He has things that he uses to kind of control. And all you got to do is, okay, what's the next thing I want to talk about? So instead of where a lot of comedians go, so what else do I want to talk about? He never does that because he just pauses and thinks to himself.
Right.
Like you just happen to be there.
Right.
But he's like...
Are you tired of running your own online ads and want to outsource it to competent professionals? Are you just catching on that the ROI on, say, a Facebook ad is still super affordable right now? Before the big box brands arrive and drive the cost up on the little guys? Maybe you want someone to run your LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter ads for under $250, $500, or even $1,000 a month. Then make the crew at AdWave your new friends. Go to adwave.tv, that's adwave.tv, to browse the affordable ad packages today.
But you know what? What's amazing to me when you think about how we connected, it's like a couple years ago, I wrote down the purpose of my life. Right, I was listening to some Napoleon Hill, some excerpts of some lectures that he had been given, and it was like a mashup of all these lectures, and I got it on audible.com. And one of the things was, he said, you know, people, I give people these exercises to do, and they don't go home and do them, and then they wonder why they don't get results, right? Similar to the story we talked last night. Yeah. But I remember listening to Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins, right, on audio. And it's amazing because he's reading the book, and I don't know if you know how Tony Robbins, do you know how he sounds?
Oh, yeah.
So this is my Tony Robbins impression. So people are like, who's that on the podcast? Is it a third person? So as a leader, you've got to understand that it takes hard work. It takes dedication. He's got that raspiness going. And when you're listening to the audio, he's like, all right, stop the tape right now. I want you to take a moment to take this exercise seriously. Because if you do, I can almost guarantee with complete certainty that your life is going to be different. Your life is going to change. So stop the tape right now. I'll wait. And I remember listening to that. I remember listening to that. And like, when I was younger, like 26, 27, listening to audio tapes, I never stopped the tape and did the exercise. I was just like, no, I got to get through this. I'm driving. I can't stop the tape. If I have to stop the tape, I'm going to have to pull the car over and I'm driving to a show, right? but later in life, when I was stuck behind a desk and I was making good money as an inside sales guy for a cloud-based accounting firm we will not name, because we're not giving them free promo, I actually stopped it and I wrote it down. And I was like, the purpose of my life is to bring joy, pleasure, and happiness to those around me. To learn daily, achieve greatly, and to always follow my divine creativity so that one day I can help at least 1,000 other people bring to life their divine gifts so that they can impact the world the way they're supposed to.
Mm.
You know?
Love it.
And I wrote it down, and I had it on a card, and I would have it at my office, and I had one at home, and I would say it to people, and I would, hey, look what God's, and then I would say it, and it almost felt like a prayer that I was saying, telling God, hey, God, pour into me so that I can fulfill what you put me here to do. And in doing that, one of those things happened to be stepping into doing hour-long shows way before I had, quote-unquote, an hour's worth of material. I didn't have an hour's worth of material, but I didn't have a choice because, A, somebody was willing to pay me $500, so I had to need to figure it out.
Right.
And so improvising an hour was because I had to. I forced myself to stretch in that degree, and then I was like, I realized I'm fully capable of it, so I could probably do more because all I got to do is tap into. Now, the other thing that alongside that is, I could speak for hours. I could probably talk for 3-4 hours, like if I'm giving a talk someplace, right? But comedy is your people are laughing, and there's a cap on how much people can stand laughing in one period of time.
Right, right.
It's about 90 minutes.
Interesting.
Anything more than 90 minutes and people get burnt out.
Wow.
So one of the things is, although Dave will do a 6-hour show, he does take you down to a lot of valleys where he's not trying to make you laugh, and it's 5 minutes of just him talking. But he's setting up for the next peak that's about to come.
Oh, wow.
He's giving you background information. You know what I mean? And then he's getting little chuckles just from his personality, and that's really important to be able to tell a story and not worry about laughter. Because like, people think you can science everything to death, right? You can just paint by numbers. No. Bill Cosby said you got to get six laughs per minute.
Right.
LPMs and stuff. You know, people want to nerd out about comedy, and honestly, it ain't that. It's deeper than that, and it ain't that serious that you got to be focusing on how many laughs you're getting per minute, per second. You know what I mean? What's your clip rate? Like, guys are talking like, you know, it's like stats, like they're, you know, analytics geeks,
like a machine or something. Yeah,
exactly. It's deeper than that. It's about captive time. when you're on stage, how captive does the audience feel to what you have to say?
Yeah, because I mean, if you're locked into Dave Chappelle, I mean, I'm laughing just from him talking.
Yeah.
Like he could just read the phone book
exactly.
And it's funny.
Exactly. I know. I know. And then I think there's also too, he has a thing he does with his voice. And I think it's something that a lot of comedians learned from Cosby. I know Pryor admitted to ripping it.
Really?
Yeah. For the first like 8-9 years of Richard Pryor's career, he just did Cosby's act or variations of it.
Huh.
But then he decided to find himself, which is a lot deeper, a lot darker. You know what I mean? And next, you know, his history is cemented. But, you know, I've got some photos on my Instagram with Dave Chappelle in a Comedy Cellar in like New York, for example. His voice when he's not on stage doesn't sound as silly. You know what I mean? It's deeper. It's calmer. It's like Michael Jackson. Like Michael Jackson, he's like, "We are the world." We are the children. But when you hear Michael talk, he's like, "Hey, can somebody give me some coffee?" Like Michael sounds deep. Like, listen, go Google, YouTube, you guys. Because what I'm saying is like, there's a performance voice that once you learn how to kind of giddy up with it a little bit and like get the audience with you, and you can like take them on your ride because you've shifted their frequency with your voice.
Huh.
You know, that's why the voice is the most amazing instrument
right. On
this planet. Like you can play instrumentals all day, but how come we don't have instrumentalists winning Grammys and stuff? Like people who just make beats alone.
Wow.
You give them to the artist because we can hear their voice, and that's the instrument that grides the
song.
That's
what takes you there. That's what takes you to that place. Wow. Yeah.
So I haven't really fooled around too much with the voice stuff. Like I do voices, I do characters. You know, I do a very mean Barack Obama. You know, but I'll pull him out later.
Okay.
But I haven't played with trying to make my voice silly, because it's just not kind of who I want to be. Like I will shift it for specific jokes, but I won't stay in that character
that tone.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah,
that's so cool, man. So you started to talk about your story a little bit. How did you, like, what were some of the big formative moments kind of early on in your career that kind of got you started, or kind of ups and downs?
Okay, yeah. So let's see, formative stuff. So Dave Chappelle is so important to me because the cast of his show was the reason why I started doing comedy. Back in December 2005, I drove through a snowstorm from Newport, Rhode Island, to Boston, and I was only in Newport for a month because I was there from Japan. I was in the Navy already, and I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew that the Navy was a stepping stone for me, and I had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. A friend of mine sent it in the mail like that summer, and I read through it like, what? I didn't know this. Cash flow quadrant, right? ESBI, like, yeah. Oh my God. And while I'm living in Japan, I realized that, you know, there's a limitation. Like the internet wasn't really popping the way it is now, where you could just like, I'll just start a business from Japan online.
Right, right.
But when I got back to the States, I was like, I'm going to do everything in the States that I couldn't do in Japan. Japan doesn't have comedy clubs. I don't know if you realize that.
They don't.
There's no stand-up in Japan.
Oh, wow.
They got karaoke.
When my dad was in the military, he lived in Japan for a long time. But no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's no stand-up. It's very... I mean, they do. They have forms of comedy that they do on television that's really goofy and silly and hacky, you know, very physical. But there's no stand-up scene. There's no, like, people running around listening to other people tell jokes. So, I mean, people don't realize stand-up comedy is an American-made art form.
Wow, yeah, I did not know
it's
that.
It's an American-made art form, and then it went throughout the world. And so everyone's doing a variation, just like hip-hop music.
Right.
Hip-hop music is a Black American-made art form.
Right.
And now everyone in the world is a hip-hop dancer. It doesn't matter where you're from.
Yeah.
It's the culture is permeated. So, but back to, I'm in Boston. I'm watching the cast of the Chappelle Show. It was Marina Franklin, Kyle Grooms, Bill Burr, and rest in peace, Charlie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's brother, had headlined the show.
Wow.
And that show, seeing the connection that occurred, but then the accountant in me calculating 600 people, $40 a ticket, 2 drink minimum, 10 shows while they were in town, like they cleared over $500,000. This is show business, emphasis on the business part. But I also connected and resonated with their stories, resonated with how much I made people laugh. And realized that my timing was good, because I was like, you know what? I never really got in trouble for being like the class clown. I graduated valedictorian of my high school after being left back twice in junior high for cutting class because I was just, you know, depressed teen at the time. And New York City is kind of a crazy place to grow up. But I got skipped once, and then I became valedictorian. So I wasn't a troublemaker in school, but I always added comedy in the class day. Like, people they never knew what they were going to get from me. They were going to get my perspective, my point of view, and it just happened to be funny most of the time when I let it out. So after seeing that show, I was like, you know what? I like business. I like people to laugh. Maybe I should just be a comedian. And then I think the very next day I went to a bookstore and bought every book I could find on comedy.
Nice.
And started writing and just off to the races. So that was a formative moment for me. Fast forward 5 years from there, I got to open up for Charlie Murphy.
Oh, wow.
My full name, y'all, is actually JamarJohnJohnson.com. And JamarJohnJohnson.com is a consumer comedy. I spent the last 14 years of my life, y'all, in the United States Navy. You're welcome. You're welcome. But to be honest with you, I don't tell you that for any applause. I just tell you that so each and every one of you know that I can swim. My lips have been known to use a flotation device from time to time. It all started in the mid-90s when a group by the name of TLC came up with that stupid song called Scrubs. Remember that Scrubs, I ain't no one knows Scrubs. And Scrubs is a guy who can't get no love from me. Hanging out of passenger side of his best friend. Like, hold up, wait a minute. Just because a guy is on the passenger side doesn't make him a scrub. Right? Have you seen this economy lately? We're carpooling, all right? We're trying to save a little bit of cash, that's all. And later on, Destiny Tide come up and says, can you pay my bills? Beyonce, you're willing to pay your own bills, Beyonce, come on.
The reason, the guy that I saw that inspired me, and the thing was, is I knew that he was Eddie Murphy's brother, and I knew that he was funny on the show, and to see that he was actually pretty funny on stage, it showed me like, oh, wow, because he wasn't always a stand-up. He learned it. So I was like, it made me remember that people, everything you do in this world can be learned. Now, some people are going to have a higher ceiling than others naturally in certain fields, but everything is a skill that can be learned by humans. You know, our mind is our greatest gift from God, right? And it is an infinite gift. Did you know that in your mind you have more neural connections than there are stars in the entire universe?
Wow.
There are more neural connections than stars in the entire universe. And it's been mathematically proven. Now, I mean, obviously the math could be a little bit off. Maybe God's like, wait a minute, I got a hidden galaxy over here you didn't see.
Yeah.
But our minds are very much infinite potential.
Wow.
You know, literally.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what are some times that, I mean, you're a very positive guy, right?
Yeah.
What are some times that you went through that were difficult that you got through?
Yeah,
right?
No. I mean, so the art, and so like I'll be real candid. You know, I had a daughter out of wedlock. It wasn't planned. It wasn't by design. And I love her to death. She's 7 years old. She lives in San Francisco. I go see her every month, FaceTime with her a couple times a week. So that was a major strain on me emotionally, not being able to see my child, this being that I helped bring into this world on a regular basis.
Mm.
But my art never really, art came easy. What came hard was the business aspect of figuring out. So once I got out of the military, that first year, like I would say the first 4 months in New York, I was like, I was jobless, you know, I think I even had to wait a while for unemployment to kick in. So luckily I had a little bit saved and I was just like, man, what am I going to do? I had so much of my identity built into what I was as an officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I struggled emotionally. And of course I went through a little bit of depression, but comedy was always there to just pick me back up. You can be depressed on stage, but even people will laugh at how depressed you're being. As you saw that when I did that show, you saw that little hidden show that I did with the clip where I was had a bad breakup. It wasn't even a breakup. It was a delusional part on my part, thinking that this girl was the one for me. But either way, I took it to heart. And then I used my comedy to transmute that negative energy into positive energy for other people.
And I mean, that is a very interesting thing that comedians do, actually, because I've heard, mm-hmm. you know, I've watched a lot of comedians in cars getting coffee. I just think that show is brilliant. Seinfeld.
Absolutely brilliant.
But he, when he interviewed a number of different comics, they would all say how the dark side of comedy is what really kind of fuels comedians.
It is the ultimate fuel. But if you think about it, the dark side of our human nature fuels a lot of things that we do. And, you know, I feel like God gave us the capability of both light and dark for us for reasons, you know, and we have to tap into it and just know to not give into it. So tapping in is different than giving in.
Yeah, because you're using it for good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because I mean, he was saying like how angry some of these comics are.
Oh yeah.
And
oh yeah. And see, for me, like anything, when things happen like to me in real time, I'm very calm within the storm. You know, maybe that was military training, maybe that was my basketball, you know, training, whatever. But I think about it, and so I will let that anger out in terms of comedy material. So to me, when anything happens to me bad, I'm like, that's going into the comedy
bank.
Right.
Right?
It's a deposit into the comedy bank.
Nice.
So some people have such a scarce mentality that they only want to put deposits into the darkness of the comedy bank. And so everything angers them. Because that's what helps them fuel their best self from a comedic standpoint.
Ooh.
So for me, I'm looking to make deposits into the comedy bank. Yes, some of it is of dark thoughts and things, but at the same time, I realize that I'm so much more light that I push that energy out in a go-giving mentality, knowing that God made me abundant.
Yeah.
You know, our bodies over our lifetime will create like some insane amount of electricity. Your body will create enough electricity to power a small European city for 2 weeks. Over the course of your lifetime.
Wow.
That's how powerful our existence is. You know what I mean? So like we are, you know, children of the sun. Like we are pure energy. So
that's like Brendan Burchard said when I was at High Performance Academy. You don't need energy, you generate energy.
Exactly.
Like you are an energy plant.
We are an energy plant, absolutely. We are, exactly. We are a cosmic solar energy plant, and so I try to lead with that part of my personality, and then I take things in and I store them for use only on stage. Like I try not to have toxic relationships and toxic communications with people that I care about. I try to have constructive conversations, you know, and thoughtful conversations.
Cool. So what's your kind of next step? Like what are you striving for?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been doing stand-up for 12 years now. I'm 38, and I feel like I have a lot of wisdom to share, a lot of ups, a lot of downs. I would say that dark time, like when I got out of the Navy in 2012 and was struggling to figure out what I wanted to do with work, Airbnb came in. So thank you, Shared Economy, for giving me a lane that allowed me time to rethink and restructure my thoughts. And so I was like, I was thrusted into entrepreneurship because I was like, I have no choice because there's no way I'm going to take a desk job that's going to restrict my mobility and my freedom in this world. So what I'm focused on now is a couple things. I'm definitely focused on business, right? Because business gives me resources gives me options. So I work in the insurance field right now. I'm working on distribution networks. There's a project that I'm working on, really important, near and dear to my heart. And on the insurance side, something like $100 billion a year is lost by people whose policies lapse early. And so I'm working with a really cool hedge fund out of Austin, Texas, that has about $200 million and then looking to help people who are in danger of lapsing their policies. So if you've missed a payment and you're over 70, you know, they can help recapture that, but then give you a lump sum settlement so that you can have living expenses increased, long-term care, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm working on that project. That's going to be just giving tremendous joy to those seniors. And then...
So these are people that are, just so I understand,
yeah.
these are people that the cost of the life insurance is going to be prohibitive for them.
Absolutely.
And most of these people end up just canceling it before they actually get the full benefit.
Absolutely.
And so what happens at that point? They lose the money?
Or they get the money
they invested back?
Yeah, so if they had some cash value in the policy, then they would get the cash value out.
And so this investment company in Austin is going to actually give them a multiple on
that? Yes, four to 10 times.
Oh, wow.
The money that they have inside their policy.
So they're about to cancel. They're about to stop it. It's going to stop the appreciation on it.
Yep.
And this company's coming in and saying, look, let us buy this off of you, because what they're looking at is we can keep this policy going mm-hmm. and reap the full benefit in time.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly.
So it's an investment for them.
It's an investment for them.
And it helps the
It helps the seniors.
Yeah.
Hands down. So, you know, I'm thinking and I love to give people more information if they're interested in that. And you can go to my website, imjamar.com, /go-giver. And so I've got some details on there. I've got some other nonprofit stuff that I do on that page. But if you go on that page and scroll down, there's a section called Make Seniors Rich Again.
Nice. Yeah, I saw your hat, your red Trump hat.
Yeah. Listen, Trump doesn't have ownership of a red hat with white words. Those hats existed beforehand. So let's not let one man, right? So that project is really important to me, because what it is it's going to be the flagship affiliate offer that I can give to people. You know, so like, for example, I have a friend who lives up in the Bay Area, and her daughter is dating a 21-year-old high school dropout. He doesn't have a job. He's got big old earrings and stuff in his ears. He's got colored hair and things like that. But he's a very personable kid. So what options does he have in society to make a living at this point in time? He's got to figure something out in a hurry.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So if I can extend an affiliate offer to him, and then give him a little bit of training, be it via video, be it via audio, a couple phone calls, I can then empower him to go out in his community and look for opportunities and people that he could potentially help. And then from a commission side, I can give him $400 to $9,600 for that effort.
Mm.
Now, let's say he's able to close one of those a month, right? He's helping a family and he's making 10 grand, whereas right now he's unemployed.
That's huge.
Right? So that's huge. So I know it's something that I have to put together and build out and spread the word. So last week, I did a luncheon at a restaurant called 71 Above. So it's on the 71st floor of a building in the U.S. Bank Tower building.
Oh, wow.
71st floor overlooking all of Los Angeles. And we had an amazing luncheon. The hedge fund manager, Lucas Siegel, came out and gave us a talk and talked about why he does it. And, you know, for me, like, I got into life insurance for a couple reasons. You know, my father was a former Marine, but he was murdered when I was 11.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had no life insurance. Mm. So I know what it's like firsthand to grow up with too much month and not enough money. And it is a horrible, horrible feeling.
Mm.
And I don't want any family to go through that if they don't have to. So I try to just spread the word and make people aware that life insurance is something that's very vital to have. You never know when God's calling you home.
Wow.
So it was like, what's the legacy you're going to leave behind? So me, myself, you know, I've got $2 million on my life. I think I'm worth much, much more than that. But that's what I can afford for right now as I build my business empire. And then from there, I've got a couple TED Talks that I'm applied for that I'm looking to do this year. And
good for you.
And I've been public speaking for 20 years, so I've got, you know, I can rock it out.
Right.
It's just a matter of like that commitment of like, no, this is the year I'm going to get one in.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing just a lot of shows. My plan is to produce my own comedy special June 18th at the El Rey Theater. The reason why that day is so important is because that's my daughter's birthday.
Nice.
So what I actually want to have her do is come down here for her birthday. I know she's got some plans up there, so I might have to figure out whether I'm going to like fly on a private jet from San Francisco back to L.A., which there's a cool kind of private jet service like Uber for private jets called Jet Smarter.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, so Jet Smarter, there's one called Surf Air. And so, you know, in the next 3 months, I'm just going to make it happen so that I can afford that membership, and then I can do both of those things in one day, and then it'll be a day to remember. So that's kind of my plan. I know it sounds out there, but you got to make big goals. You got to have big dreams.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Well, that's awesome, man. This has been so much fun. I've really appreciated meeting you and talking, and I mean, just great conversation, man.
I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me.
Really, really just love to encourage you and what you're doing. And hopefully this will help the listeners. Hopefully they got some insights and some benefits. I'll link up everything in the show notes.
Okay.
But thank you so much, Jamar.
My pleasure. I am Jamar.com. Follow me at Jamar J on Twitter and Instagram. Peace.
Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. I have been Jeff Dolan, and today is Sunday, March 18th, 2018. Please download the Anchor app, find the show, and click the message button to call into the show with any questions or comments. I would love to hear your voice on the show. You can subscribe at jeffdolan.com or on your favorite podcast platform, and I encourage you to share this with any creators in your life. Have a good week, be kind, and take care.